Hello again, and welcome to another episode of No Prize Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Bud Young, and with me from the, where are you from, Philly?
Yes, I am from Philly.
I saw you with the Eagles shirt on last time. You got to be from Philly if you like the Eagles.
Well, now you do. Nowadays, they're like 0-2, so if you got to be representing real hard, man, on them. Come on, guys.
So how are you doing, Lucas?
I'm doing beautiful. Not so much when it comes to the Marvel news, man. It's some sad news, man.
Yeah, you know, that's we're just talking about the Marvel Disney really kind of pushing back the movies again. So we were supposed to be getting Black Widow originally, May of 2020. Pushed back to, midsummer, now pushed back to November, and now pushed back to May 2021. So we're going to get a full year without any kind of Marvel movie magic happening. The one thing, what I was reading about that is they're still not stopping production on, like, the Spider-Man or any of the other Marvel movies. I think we're going to have a glut, like, in 2021, where we're going to get like 6, 7, 8 Marvel movies. Is that too much?
Yes.
It is. I think so too. But they're going to have to.
Because I remember a time when a Marvel movie was the blockbuster, right? When it was supposed to be, okay, boom, 2003, 2004, boom, this is summer, boom, here you go. This is the big freaking big explosion, freaking no, don't think about it, just here you go movie. And then they eventually evolved to that, right before November, December, hey, this is a movie, this is here, hey, here's another movie you can take care of your family to and everything. And then they would do the same thing over and over again. But now you're talking about 8 movies stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
What's that going to be, like a movie like every 2 months? Come on now. And then you got to remember that I know they've sort of slowed down the production on Star Wars movies and everything, but they're going to have to come out with something in the meantime, yep. I would think, right?
But let's not also forget that Disney's producing WandaVision and Cap and Falcon and other the TV shows for Disney Plus. But now we've been told we're getting WandaVision within the next couple of months. So before the end of 2020, we'll have that. But they pushed back Cap and Falcon to 2021. They pushed back all the other Disney Plus stuff to 2021. So now the thing that confuses me is, man, if this pandemic doesn't start to slow down or are we going to continue to push these back? Or when does Marvel and Disney say, hey, let's just chalk it up, because even if we release 8 movies next year, they're not all going to make $1 billion at the box office, which is what they want, right? Which is what they're waiting for. And when do they start kind of releasing these things? Honestly, with some of the movies that have been coming out on Prime or anything that you could just like buy for $30 or pay. I would pay $30 to see Black Widow.
Right.
You know, because.
And I think that's a great freaking point that you're making, and I see where you're going with this. But I think what happened was, and they're taking the wrong thing from it, is that whole Mulan movie, right? Yeah. I don't know how much they made, but they probably looked at the Mulan numbers, and they didn't like what they saw. So they said, you know what, let's go ahead and pull back and just still go the traditional route, which is the wrong way to go about this. Mulan is not Black Widow. Mulan is not all these other freaking joints, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it can go two ways right now at this point, right? So if they're going to delay, let's say Black Widow. Let's take Black Widow for an example. We got to wait another 6 months to see that, 7 months to see that. When that does come out, is it still going to have the fans behind it, or are the fans going to have moved on? We haven't gotten a Marvel movie since, Spider-Man Far From Home, right?
Yeah, they're going to move on, because the hype in between that last freaking war movie, the Infinity Stone War that we had, and Black Widow opening is going to be so far in between, people are going to forget. They're going to forget who her character was.
Yeah.
they're going to forget. There was, I mean, even through the Infinity Wars, there was hardly any narrative that made her the focus of anything. So the gap in between that and when that movie is actually going to come out, people are going to forget, right? They're blasting out all these other freaking little comic books about her, but that's not going to resemble anything that's in the movie, right?
Yeah.
And then in the meantime, Eternals, right? We talked about Eternals. The Eternals comic book that was supposed to be in lieu and highlighting who these guys are comes out next month. Are they going to push that back?
They have to, better. Right?
Please, yeah, guys, please.
They have to. Crushing us
with 30 freaking 30 Dongon variants. Go on, guys. Push that back.
They're gonna have to do something. You know, I mean, it is weird. You know, of course we're living here in the comic book world, and then you have the movie world, and they're on two different schedules. And you know, I don't even know if, given the comic book world, that they can even stop the publication at this point. You know, they could say maybe they've already sold pre-copies or what have you. But I mean, they've stopped production on a ton of other Marvel stuff this year. You know, I'm still waiting for my next issue of Runaways that hasn't come out in like 7 months. But that's fine. So the pandemic has kind of disrupted everything, and it's going to continue to disrupt things. So we're just going to have to hold off another, you know, 6 or 7 months before we get any Marvel movies. But then I think by the end of 2021, we'll probably be sick of it, and we'll be sick of talking about it, because it's going to be another one. And we won't even remember Black Widow in May. We'll have trouble in December of next year remembering which movies came out and what we saw and what we were talking about. So anyhow, let's jump into our reviews this week. And we have, what are we doing first? We're going to do She-Hulk. Immortal She-Hulk number one. That this is, you know, that She-Hulk has been kind of the hot number since the end of Empire, where she died during Empire and then came back. But, you know, who doesn't die and come back these days? It's going to be one of the problems that I have with this issue. I think this is titled The Three Deaths of Jennifer Walters. Writer is Al Ewing, with art by John Davis Hunt, colors by Marcio Menez, and letter is VC's Corey Pettit. This is a direct connection to the Immortal Hulk. So if you're not reading the Immortal Hulk, stop, go back, read that. Read Immortal She-Hulk. You need it to understand what's going on, and you really get it's also an essential part of the story. So if you are reading Immortal Hulk and did not get this issue, you need to get it, because it reveals certain things that they have not revealed in Immortal Hulk yet. And we know that the big baddie in this now is the leader. And he is pulling stuff in this that he hasn't pulled in Immortal Hulk. So yeah. it's pretty essential reading if you are a fan of Al Ewing's run on Hulk. So this book starts with She-Hulk kind of the retelling of her origin. And I can't remember the last time She-Hulk's origin was retold.
They've been retelling it on and off, man. Freaking in fact, in the last Immortal She-Hulk, during the Empire, they actually delved into it a little bit. It was a little weird, and then, like you were talking about the Immortal Hulk, they did delve into that, and where instead of talking about the Hulk, he actually talked about She-Hulk and the leader's suspicions of what the She-Hulk is. So,
So they go back twice in this book, because She-Hulk, if you remember, she's died twice in the last 5 years, and she died during Civil War II when Thanos pretty much killed her, and then she came back. And if you remember the Hulk run that she had when she was all gray and savage, that I hated because she never appeared as Hulk in it. She was always Jennifer Walters. And then again here in Empire, where she was killed by the Gatati and then came back. Now, I guess before we go on, how do you like this iteration of She-Hulk? The kind of like the kind of dumb Hulk, dumb, can't string words together She-Hulk. Do you enjoy this one? This kind of
absolutely. Okay. No, okay. Because it's more. And I see what Al Ewing is doing. They're trying to string along all these gamma mutates, so it makes a little bit more sense, right? And it's all about the gamma rays and the colors. So I mean, I'll talk about that once you're done and everything, because I don't want to bore everything. Because once Bud's done, if you guys want to freaking turn it off because you don't like science, you can turn it off. But I'm going to bore you a little bit. So go ahead, Bud.
Yeah. So this book is really kind of getting She-Hulk involved in the story that's going on in Immortal Hulk, which was one of the missing things that I thought in the entire Immortal Hulk run, when they're reintroducing Betty Ross as the Harpy, they bring back Rick Jones, Doc Samson, all these gamma powered individuals. They brought back Abomination, the one person that hasn't been appearing is She-Hulk. And I was like, she's the like second most important gamma irradiated person in this universe, and you can't involve She-Hulk. So I'm glad to see that she's getting some recognition, and she's turning out to be a linchpin in the storyline, which, if this has been the idea the entire time, great. So the big reveals in this book are not the character moments between Jennifer Walters and Thor, or Jennifer Walters and Wolverine, or getting the story kind of moved in so that she's kind of getting involved. It's really the kind of flashbacks of when, after she dies in Civil War II, and she ends up in the quote unquote below hell, behind the green door, to use the porn movie kind of connotation here, which I think is pretty obvious. But the first flashback we see is when she dies after Civil War II, and she runs into Brian Banner, who is Bruce's father, who is kind of the antagonist over in Immortal Hulk. And now if you got to kind of think that this is before Immortal Hulk starts. So this is kind of like a prequel where he meets Jennifer and they have a conversation, and he kind of reveals that he has been sent from after Hulk killed him back in his book many, many years ago, that he ended up in hell, came back, tried to beat everybody, and then they sent him back and he ended up below hell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And now this is where Jennifer appears, and now you realize that this whole gamma radiated devil Hulk, all this kind of thing, when Hulks die, now they end up in this below hell place, and they pass through the green door to come back to life. Now the gimmick here is, after the second time she dies, and she runs into the leader, who is now running around in this below hell. We don't see Brian Banner because I believe he was defeated in Immortal Hulk a few months ago. And then She-Hulk and the leader have this conversation where they reveal that the reason that they come back and the reason that they're immortal is because they passed through the green door, which is a big explanation to that Al Ewing hasn't done in Hulk yet. So you're getting some answers here. And then after she passes through and comes back to life in Empire, you have this page where the leader is holding the door of, like a reiteration. It looks like a playing card now, but now he's green and he turns it red and he says, "Now I have the power and I control the door. So I decide whether or not you come back or not." And then he's, you know, cryptically says, don't die again, because now you might be dead forever. But it's interesting to see Leader on one side, and you know that he's like mentally controlling, he was mentally controlling Bruce in Immortal Hulk. So he is on the side of this door, along with Brian Banner. I think Brian Banner's still there, so I think we might see a resurgence of him over in Immortal Hulk. But this is a key linchpin book. If you are a fan of Immortal Hulk, you need to have this book for almost explanation purposes, to explain kind of the plot. There were a couple of problems I had with this book, and I'll tell you and I think that you just said earlier, but right before we went on the air, about tying into X-Men, but the Wolverine kills what was the name of the bad guy?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy. Was it Solomon?
Tantrum.
Damn, so, right.
Okay. So the bad guy's name is Tantrum, and S.H.I.E.L.D. gets in a fight with him, and Wolverine comes by and stabs him in the back and kills him. Tantrum's a mutant, right? So the thing that bugged me about this is that this is another instance of Marvel not living by their own rules. And over in X-Men, the rule is that mutants don't kill mutants anymore. And that's like the biggest sin now is for a mutant to kill another mutant. So they even have a conversation after Wolverine stabs Tantrum in the back. Oh, well, you know, we'll just bring him back to life. And I'm just like, well, no, because you're not supposed to be killing him. So that was one of my problems in this issue, because if Wolverine's not living by the rules, then who else is, really? The other thing was her weird costume, which was the first time I think we've seen the costume over in Empire. Yes. But when she changes from Hulk to Jennifer, all of a sudden the costume changes color. Like, it changes from green, like looks like she's wearing kind of like an armored bikini, into a full bodysuit, which covers up all the
all the parts, just basically the naughty parts, and that's about it, and her forearms, and that's about it. Yeah.
So to me, that was a bit strange. And then the joke about, I'm immortal, and then when she's just explaining that page where they were talking about Civil War II and Thanos killed her, she's like, oh, Jim Rhodes died. I'm like, and then I was like, Jim Rhodes is back too, so everybody's immortal. Exactly. You know, that was one of my big issues. Kind of, it was always kind of a laughing part of it, but I liked the relationship between She-Hulk and Thor. The dynamic is really good there, and it's interesting. And I kind of really love how they, with the artist drew Thor when she said want to train with Hulk, and he just kind of had that Fabio sexy look in the way that he was drawn. I was just like, oh, come on. But it was amusing to me. But they do have a conversation about being immortal, and Thor explains to She-Hulk how he killed Galactus, which, thank you, continuity between the Marvel Universe, and you actually are referencing something that happened in another Marvel book.
Sure.
This is a flame on for me, and not only because it's an essential part of the Hulk story. I think it stands on its own as a good She-Hulk story. It's weaved itself into the Marvel Universe as a whole. It's become a total like linchpin issue in the Immortal Hulk story. It's really essential reading if you're a Marvel fan and still following the stories. So go ahead and bore us with your science.
Yes. So yeah, this whole dynamic with the green door, red door thing is very interesting, right? Because, and I hope it's intentional, because when it comes to gamma rays, right? Gamma rays aren't green, they're not red, they're not nothing, they're invisible, right? So that's why her first showing up as a gray-type mutant monster, That's all the that's makes a lot more sense than anything else, right? Because the gamma rays are invisible, right? And then the rays that are right there right before you get to the gamma rays is red. That would explain the red door, right? And then right before you get to the red door, there's a whole bunch of other colors, but then there's the green door, which is the strongest and most stable door, right? And that's been alluded to in a whole bunch of books that the Hulks are their most powerful when they're gray, right? So you go from gray, then you got those red Hulk, those red joints, and they're, you know, they're kind of unstable and they die a lot. But then there's the green door. I mean, there's the green stuff, and that's what they are. And you know, they're kind of smartish or whatever. They can actually talk when they're freaking green. But once again, gray is and they put the gray She-Hulk in there. So I'm glad they did that. So if that's what Al Ewing is going for, I love it. We can finally stop giving our kids stupid stuff, make them stupider. Thinking when it comes to the gamma stuff, right? Let's make our kids smarter. You can show them the way. All right. I love this issue, and like you said, they're tying into it. They've got the new All Father Thor going on there. The other thing that it's tying into is that red door. So we'll talk about that red door later on, but that red door does show up in the X-Men.
Really?
It does. You didn't realize it. You looked dead right at it, but it does show up there. And it's very important, and we'll go into the context of that later on. But that's all I got. Like I'm with you. It's kind of interesting where we started off with the Immortal Hulk. Starting off with that first, where it was supposed to be a hard comic, it got everybody's attention. Now it's starting to slow down and say, okay, now that we've got your attention, here are the new rules for Hulk. we keep expecting them to go back and everything. Like, nope, here are the new rules for work for Hulk. All those questions that you have, yeah, throw that out. Yep, we understand that. Doesn't make throw that out. Here are the new rules, right? And what it does, also what this issue does, it freaking craps on a lot of speculators because you're like, okay, well, her first appearance was supposed to be that. And they're like, nope. When she was first a Hulk, she was Immortal Hulk, and she will always be the Immortal Hulk. That's just the way it works. Another interesting thing is you were talking about Brian Banner and her in the One Below All place. What's interesting is it doesn't. I'm not sure if that's where they were when they were, but what I do know is that he had entered himself into one of the beasts, just from the realm of beast, right? And that's one thing that hasn't been talked about is, hey, he's not that big beast, that One Below All character. He's not the only one down there. There's a few realm of beasts. So he put himself in there. We know there's more down there. She killed him while he was down there, so that allowed once she killed that one particular beast, that allowed that whoever was powerful enough to come down here and just rule down there, which is how the leader was able to get down there, because she killed that beast. Now the leader's running around freaking rolling stuff, so that's an interesting aspect as well. And then once again, now that I'm thinking about it, so there's the One Below All place, right? And then we know that there's an opposite of that. There should be the one above all place as well. And we're just going. And if there's a realm of beasts, there's got to be a realm of light for that place. So it's going to be interesting in between all the stuff that's happening if they're going to start showing that to us. In fact, I do know, and we'll talk about that once we get to the X-Men stuff. So yep, flame on, freaking pick this book up. The only thing that I don't like is there's a slew of variants, and they're very expensive. Wait till they become cheap, wait until people forget about this book, then go ahead and pick that up. But this is by no means that something you should be speculating very high on.
All right. I think we're going to have a common theme in all of our books that we review this week, because the next book that we're going to jump into is Venom.
Venom, yeah, man, freaking, it's Let's see. Let me make sure I can actually make it over there.
Well, let me give. I'll give you the background and let you take over. So we got Venom Beyond Part 3, which is Venom issue number 28, with the writer Donny Cates. Artist is Juan Gedeon. Color artist is Jesus Zabertov, with letters by Clayton Cowles. So take it away, Lucas.
Yes, sir. So what's been happening, just a little bit background, Eddie Brock and his long lost found son have met up. They've been going through a whole bunch of stuff. Null has been making appearance through different, you know, drones or whatever. And now Dylan, his son, has been manifesting different powers. So they went to the Maker, the smartest person they knew, to see if they could, if he can help him out. While they went to visit him, he was working on a portal. They slipped through the portal somehow, and now they're in this different universe, like the 65126 or something like that. And it's all kind of messed up. Venom is all over the place. Every single one of the superheroes has some type of Venom symbiote with them. We're talking about Captain America, Wolverine, Deadpool, Spider-Man, you name it. They've got this type of symbiote, and they've got the Null thing on their chest. Eddie and Dylan, they ran to the sewers where they met up with Annie, which was supposed to be Dylan's son. And then she starts telling them what actually happened. And apparently what actually happened is that this is the universe where when Eddie was at the top of that bell tower and about to kill himself, he actually pulled the trigger and killed himself. All right. And then right after that, she had ran into the tower to check on him, and she found him dead. And that's right after that, the Venom takes over her, and then she goes through the whole history. Well, I mean, she went through the whole history, and then they don't spend more than that, but that's what happened. The question I have right now is, and it's going to be an interesting thing, because I know they're going to try and answer that, is if Eddie had killed himself after that. In fact, actually, let me keep going on this. Later on in the book, what they expound on is that the character that's ruling this whole freaking universe and galaxy and everything is Codex, right? He's the guy with the long white hair that his first appearance was in, like, Venom number 25. There's a big splash for page for him. People were wondering, well, who's that? What is that guy? Who is that? Well, his name is Codex. And what they expand on in this issue is that he is Dylan, right? He's Dylan Brock. He's Eddie's son. He was the universe. He's the ruler of this universe. So then the question now becomes, if in this universe, Eddie had killed himself, who is the father of Codex? I can understand that that Annie's going to be the mother. I got that. But then who is Codex's father if Eddie had killed himself? Because the way it was explained to us in the 616 is that we understand that there was no conception and everything, and that, you know, it was just Venom going from Eddie into Annie and healing her and everything, and there was this love thing going on, immaculate conception. Boom, there you go, right? But there was Eddie DNA inside of Annie. But if Eddie killed himself and Venom had never touched Eddie, then where's Codex come from? That's something that they're going to need to expand on and answer that question. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
It does.
Once again, this is another Flame On book. This is one of those books that you got to pick up, especially if you're a speculator. You got to pick that up. There's actually a second print that's out there that has Codex right there, right there on the cover. We can go ahead and freaking grab those up. People are going to be wanting those. Go ahead and pick up those Venom number 25s. I don't care if it's A, B, or C. I don't care if it's the first, second, or third, fourth print. Go ahead and freaking pick those up. Those are going to be collectibles right now. This is a Flame On issue for me. What did you think, bud?
So I do think that it's a kind of an essential story point in this Venom Beyond story. I think in Donny Cates's kind of Venom saga, it's a very, very important issue. I personally don't like these types of stories because it's like a big what if, right? I mean, this it's a what if Annie became Venom instead of Brock. And, you know, it seems to me a lot of the times that it's a writer's easy way out to find stories from another universe so that they don't have to obey the continuity laws. Not that anybody does anymore anyway. So this is kind of grumpy old man talking a little bit, I guess. But I just, you know, as far as the story of it, it's interesting. Codex is a visually cool villain. I think he looks neat. I really don't like another universe full of symbiotes. And I think the artists think it's cool that they get to draw any superhero with a right. symbiote, you know? And so I think visually it can be cool. But as far as like story goes, okay, everybody's a Venom. It's okay. So now with live within that story and tell me a good story. So now we have Dylan, who is Codex, but also he's the little kid that just teleported into this universe. So I kind of want to see the two of them have a moment, right? And right. maybe little Dylan realizes what he might become, because Dylan's got powers too. And we exactly. really haven't really seen too much of them. Now, to me, I think Brock is Codex's father. It seems to me like perhaps Brock and Annie might have had sex before Brock pulled the trigger. Maybe didn't know Annie was pregnant, you know. So and in that sense stands to reason with the way Codex reacted when he found out that Brock was there. Mm. You know, the other reveal is real. The reveal that Virus, who has been changing, chasing Brock and Dylan through the portals and everything, that Virus is actually Matt Gargan, Scorpion. And that's at the end of that issue is where they put a symbiote back on Gargan. And if you remember, Scorpion was Venom. He was the second Venom in the Thunderbolts after the symbiote was taken away from Brock. So that's interesting. I like that kind of how they're tying that in. The thing I think was a bit hokey was the symbiote strike team that Annie had assembled was yeah. you know, Peter Parker, Cletus Cassidy, and of course like Deadpool. Like, yeah. Of course Deadpool, right? So you know. I don't want to flame this on. It's a bit of a stretch simply because of the way that kind of I was expecting and the kind of story tropes and kind of easy way out. Like, I don't really like that kind of aspect. I don't like the what ifs. I don't like a universe full of symbiotes. We've seen it 100 times. I can imagine, I haven't seen any of the variant covers for this issue, but I imagine it's probably a bunch of the heroes or villains all symbioted out, right?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think for this particular one, there wasn't a bunch of them. There are some second prints that are on the way, which has Codex right there on the front cover. You know, people are ordering that heavily. So that's going to be the collectible for this one.
Yeah, and the one thing that we didn't really see how this all ties in is how is this part of the storyline going to tie into the overall introduction of Null or the big like Venom crossover? Because we kind of have to think that this story is going to be like a huge linchpin issue for going forward, right? Because and for the most thing, I think it's the reintroduction of Annie Waring, who's dead in the 616. But to have her come back, you know, I mean, it's not a bit of a stretch to think that she might be pulled back into the 616, and we might have another Venom hero running around. of course, with a different name, but, you know, they'll figure it out and be one big happy Venom family.
Exactly. That'd be great. So, I mean, it's going to be one of those, if the fans love it, if they like it, then Marvel will make it so. Just like the Miles Morales, he was from a different universe, and people liked him enough that Marvel made it so. And just like Spider-Gwen, that's another one. She was from another universe. So if people like Annie back, then they'll go ahead and freaking put her through the portal and say, all right, let's go. Let's see what happens with this.
Yep. So I think in that case, you know, it might be, like you said, go out and pick it up, because it's going to be a huge like a linchpin issue and a reintroduction. All right, so let's take a quick break, and we will come back and we will unpack the massive X of Swords issue that came out this week.
You know, you always hear those stories of people going through cancer, and you think, that's never going to happen to me. I can remember that night when I got that call. It's about as vivid as my son being born. That's when I'm told your mom has leukemia. And I just drop. Didn't know what to think or feel. I just felt numb and drop. Comic Crusaders presents Virtual Con 2. Only on comiccrusaders.com.
All right, and we're back. How was your break?
Just sipping on some moonshine. You know me, man.
You got to sip on that. All right, so X of Swords creation. Number one, it's a one shot leading into the gigantic crossover event of the fall. I kind of like how they say it's part one of 22. So just in case. Okay, so first of all, before we even start about this issue, $6.99 for a one shot book. Given it's 68 pages, you're kind of getting what you paid for, right? How many variants are there on this book?
Multiples. However, there was only one that actually freaking mattered. And I got it right here. And it's amazing that people aren't tracking this yet. This is the one per store party variant. It's a kind of like a sketch variant.
Oh.
Midtown was selling this for $176. The other ones, they're like $20. So pick this up. This is a very important book, because this is the one to unite them all.
So, we'll get into them. No, I mean, that's interesting, right? Because that looks like it's the first appearance of all 10 of the characters that have swords. Because in the book, in this book, and in other things, that they've all been in shadow, and you've seen five of them, but you don't see the other five. So hold that up again, because I didn't.
I'm looking at seven. So we got three more to go.
Okay. So I see a Captain Britain in there that I didn't notice before. So he's one of the ones that were in shadow. We got Wolverine, Magic, Psylocke. Is that Storm? Cable? Who's down? Who's up at the top there? Hold it down.
Apocalypse.
Oh, okay. Apocalypse. Who, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. Okay. Interesting. So does that look like they're going to bring Brian Braddock back as Captain Britain? Or what do you think?
Yes. Yes. I've seen stuff in here and in other places that says yes. Maybe not necessarily as the Captain Britain, but he will be rising that role, and he will have a sword. So.
Okay. So this, let me just give out the credits, and then, you know, I'll see what you think of this before we really kind of unpack it, because I think it's going to take both of us to kind of make sense of everything. So we got Jonathan Hickman and Teeny Howard as the writers, Pepe Larraz as the artist, Marty Gracia as the color artist, and we got Clayton Cowles again on VC, on letters. And then, you know, there's like five different editors Hickman, Jay Bowen, Annalise Bisa, Jordan D. White, and of course CB Sapolsky. So why don't you go ahead and take us through maybe the first part of this part of this issue, because there's really a lot of stuff going on in this book.
Right. Yeah. So it is so interesting what they're doing with this, because they actually started unpacking this, some of this stuff, during the House of X, Power of X series, right? So the main thing that they give you is they open up with this big shot of Day of the Lore, right? Which is called, they call it the Last Watchtower, the Kingdom of Jayador, the Other World. Well, that's all good and well, but inside the House of X, Power of X, this was called Jacob's Ladder. Same exact building, different name right now. And what's happening is it's being surrounded by all these other types of mutants and everything, and it's getting ready to get sieged. And in the middle of this, directing all of this, there's like these four little beings in there. And their first appearance was in Marvel Comics 1000, which was, once again, makes that a big book, makes it a very important book. The only thing is that D23, which is the one that everybody wants, that black and white sketch, is like an $8,000 freaking book. So, let's not even worry about that right now. And then at inside everything, there's these other beings that we've never really seen before. We don't really care about them and everything. And then, you know, in the midst of all this, there's a character that was kind of prominent during the 80s, I think it was. Her name was Saturnine. But you know, don't ask me what her first appearance was, but I do believe it was like Marvel Superheroes, a book from the UK, a book that's going to be very difficult to get over here. So if you're in the UK, go through those bins and look for her first appearance. I think it was like Marvel Superheroes 87 or 80. I forget. But go searching for that. Put it on the bay, because right now speculators are hot for that freaking book. And then also another character that shows up is the Corteus Coy. He's the big bull character. People are hot on that, but people don't realize that his first appearance was in the free comic book day book for X-Men. So look out for that. And then there's all types of stuff coming in and out of portals, out of red portals with red lights. All right. Once again, this is where that whole red door comes into. Right, because we don't know where it's coming from. Maybe it looks like it's possibly coming from the below place, the realm of beast, right? And what they start talking about is how this place with Dealor and these other portals, it's kind of like there's all these portals out there, but this is the one place where you can get to each and every one of those portals. So, for instance, there's the portal to Krakoa. Right, but then there's only the seven portals, like the other portals with the little flowers and everything. No, right, but there's other portals out there to other universes that this is the center for, and you can get to every single one of those other portals from this place. So that's a very interesting aspect that we haven't seen before. I hope they do well with it. I hope they don't get too crazy with that. I can understand that. I'm fine with that. That's all good and well.
So let me jump in for a second. So I want to just kind of just as far as Saturnine goes, she was if you've ever followed Captain Britain or the Excalibur book, she was in that a lot. The Saturnine is the queen or the ruler of Otherworld. In Otherworld, where she's at this in that Citadel, is what they call like the Nexus of Realities, where all these, like you said, all these portals are open to these other realms. And they even explain in the book, if you read the text, that the Citadel is kind of like the spoke of a wheel, and the portals go out to different realms, but it's kind of like a wheel. Even though the Citadel doesn't move, they said that the realm doesn't work without the center. So that and Saturnine also is the leader of the Captain Britain Corps, right? So there's one Captain Britain, Brian Braddock, and the 616, but all the other universes have their own Captain Britain, right? So, and they all get together here in this nexus of realities. Now, back in the Excalibur book, if anybody's following that, the Captain Britain Corps has pretty much been wiped out. So that is why there is, the armies are at the gates pretty much, is because the portals are unprotected. So that's kind of the explanation here for that, which is like why I said at the beginning, there's a lot to unpack, because there's stuff that had been going on in previous issues of the mutant books. And you kind of have to have a little bit of knowledge about what has happened before. I think Jonathan Hickman's kind of done his job as far as doing a lot of research and building up to this book. So, but I just wanted to give a little background on Saturnine. So go ahead.
Yeah. Good rundown. So from there and everything, they get done with that explanation, and then apparently a big battle had happened. And then in the midst of that, back on Krakoa, you have the Summoner, right? This is the guy that I've been telling you guys, we can got to pay attention to this guy. His first appearance was in X-Men number 2 from 2020. He's like this white, pale guy and everything, and he shows up with the body of Banshee, right? He tries to explain to the guys what's going on, but they actually send him to the Quiet Council, and they immediately make the pronouncement, all right, we're going to war, let's freaking knock this thing out of the sky, let's freaking kill everybody on it, let's fucking just go ahead and destroy it. The island of Krakoa speaks up and says, no, you're not going to do that. Don't do that. You guys are welcome here. You guys are visitors and you're welcome here, which is big, right? Because the assumption was these guys belong to Krakoa. Krakoa belongs to the mutants, and that's it. Nope, Krakoa is saying, you guys are just visitors here. If you want to continue living here, you won't do anything. And the mutants are like, all right, well, we got to listen to the island. And then, of course, they send their own little special ops group to freaking actually try and take care of it, which is what it was going to be like Apocalypse and Summoner. And I forget the names of the other groups. But they do go into a little explanation, and they bring back part of the story of how once Krakoa and this other place, Arako, were just one island at one point, but then they got split in two by the Twilight Sword. So this is the first time that the Quiet Council is hearing of this, and it's going to be pretty interesting to see how they play it out going forward. The other interesting thing is how Krakoa speaks. You know, he speaks through another mutant. I forget the name of him.
Cypher.
Yeah, Cypher. That's some interesting stuff. The team that shows up is Apocalypse, Summoner, Beast, Angel, but in this old Apocalypse suit.
Archangel, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And I forget the names of the other two characters that are in there.
Yeah, I'll run it down. There's Polaris, Archangel, Siren, Beast, Richter, Rockslide, and Havoc, along with Summoner and Apocalypse.
Yeah. So from there they go in, and almost immediately they see the big army that's out there. Apocalypse. They're asking Apocalypse, what is this? He goes, oh, I actually know these folks, right? So he goes down there, you know, just to say his hellos and everything. And interestingly enough, they say, yeah, we know you and everything. And they start talking crap to him. And he goes, yeah, I regret that I left you guys behind. No, it wasn't meant to be that way. But if I didn't leave you guys behind, bad things were going to happen. And they go, yeah, okay, we understand. And all of a sudden, the High Summoner comes out of nowhere and stabs Apocalypse in the back. So to give some context, Apocalypse is Summoner's grandfather, right? And he just stabs his grandfather in the back to dispense of him. That was really, really weird. In the meantime, you know, they go more into the freaking story. The Saturnine comes out and she starts talking to them and she starts explaining what's going on with swords, right? Because earlier in the story, there was some weird futuristic freaking, I forget what you, the card. They dealt the cards and it's supposed to tell what's going to happen in the future. And what she talks about is she talks about the swords, and it's kind of a layout of which swords is going to play into this. And the ones that were interesting, of course, we got the Twilight Sword, but it also talks about the God Killer. What's the God Killer? That's the freaking Necro Sword from Venom. That's that connection. What else is it? What does she talks about? She talks about the Chaos Sword, the Grass Cutter, right? Which is a big sword that's big in the Wolverine storytelling stuff. And it just goes down the line. Also talks about the sword that Cable has, right, which is the sword from the ROM universe. So that ties into everything. And it just goes down this line of all these other swords. I'm going to have to freaking look and see what they were. But once again, it's tying all this other stuff. Oh, and I forget the name of the one sword of which she called it, but she brings out, just like the leader did with the little red door, she literally pulls that out. A freaking little red card. She says, see the card that was drawn. See what shape the future holds. She pulls it out. She says, see it now. The Twilight Blade. There's the Mercy Blade from Million. The Red Sword of War. The Colony. The Black Bone of Amidaut. Seducer. Pug or Pug. Purity. Diluvium or Amasa, the Sword of Might, the Starlight Sword, which I believe that's supposed to be the sword that Cable's holding, the Grass Cutter, that's going to be playing prominent in Wolverine, the God Killer, that is the Necro Sword, Warlock, the Soul Sword, the Scarab, the Light of Galador, and once again, that's the Cable Sword, and the Skybreaker. So there are some swords that I haven't seen yet that I'm not familiar with, but that is the big thing about this issue.
The one sword that they haven't shown yet, but is a dead giveaway, is Warlock. And so Warlock is actually a character, you know, the Phalanx. So he's one of those computer, the aliens, and he's actually bonded to Cypher. So what I'm led to believe is that Cypher will end up holding a sword that is actually Warlock.
A soul sword. So probably the soul sword.
No, the soul sword is magic. Magic is her sword is the soul sword.
Okay.
That's two different swords. There's a couple of them. A couple of the story points that I kind of want to put out is that the characters that we see at the beginning of the Egyptian kind of throwbacks, those are Apocalypse's children. And these are the original horsemen of Apocalypse, war, famine, disease, pestilence. So the reintroduction of these characters is cool. And I think we had found in one of the previous issues of X-Men that those characters were taken away from him millennia ago, so that he believed that they were dead. And later on this issue, when he sees them, and Apocalypse and Archangel have a moment which kind of explains why he's in the Archangel costume. But then he says, you know, Archangel says to Apocalypse, is there nothing you've done that you regret? And then he sees his children and he says, this I regret. And a tear falls from his face. So very dramatic. But this is all foreshadowing, right? Because where he knows the summoner was his grandchild. When he sees his children, he realizes that he's about to be betrayed, right? Because he knows if my kids are alive, then my grandson or my granddaughter is working for them, not me, right? And then what this adds up to is when he's stabbed and when it looks like Summoner betrays his grandfather, that's actually a willing, I think, a sacrifice at that point of Apocalypse. You know, and I don't exactly know what the sacrifice signifies yet, but it seems very kind of almost like Macbeth, kind of like Shakespearean.
King Lear, yeah, King Lear, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So I think this going forward, I think this is like the big moment, and that's kind of like one of those when they were doing the tarots earlier, the tarot cards, and the Hangman was one of the cards. A hangman would, and they even said, I think, that it was a sacrifice card, right?
Yeah.
That someone was going to have to, kill. Right there in the text, he's hanging himself because he's sacrificing himself. So Apocalypse sacrifices himself probably for the good of the group, which is kind of weird when you're talking about Apocalypse. The other character that I think is very going to become very interesting in this is when they talk the Eight of Cups is a character that is going to appear, hasn't appeared yet other than the card, but I think Monet, who went with the characters in this issue, and she's not depicted in the Hanged Man cards. The Hanged Man card was, if you look, the group that went to the other world, Apocalypse's little group. Mine is Monet, who's actually the Eight of Cups card. So something's going to happen to her. And so a lot of this is foreshadowing. There's a lot of interesting things happening here. I can see where it's been taken so long that they've kind of built up. And when you're reading through this, you're like, oh yeah, that was in this book. Oh yeah, that was in this book. I didn't even know that they were using this to build towards this. But it's interesting. I like the book. I like the buildup, but it's like so many of these crossovers is I really kind of hope that they can carry through, like follow through on it. Sure. Couple of issues that I had with the book, in the X Factor series. Is it the X Factor? No, it's the what's the series with is not Fallen Angels, Hellions. The Hellions series has Havoc as like kind of almost like the like a prisoner, like he killed a mutant, so. He's kind of like the bad guy now, and he's like being reformed. Here they make no mention of this. He's just in the team, where before he's like in that prison team with like Nanny and Orphan Maker and Wild Child and Psylocke. So it kind of doesn't really explain itself at that point. That's really kind of a minor issue that I had. But other than that, it's this book is really kind of tight. It explains a lot of what has been going on. It introduces some really cool characters that I think are going to, going forward, be real menaces, because you can't really have the mutants aren't fighting each other anymore. So, yeah. You know, so what kind of threats are you going to throw at the mutants? So this is really kind of an epic next level threat. And to utilize Otherworld, which has been, I guess a really a scene in the Excalibur books and the Captain Britain books, and Otherworld has been, I mean, if you think of other characters that have been involved in Otherworld, you're thinking Black Knight, you're thinking like Avalon, like King Arthur, all that stuff. All that stuff is in like Otherworld. Man-Thing has been in Otherworld. There's a bunch of different characters and different ways that they could go, and characters that they could actually bring in. But this is I think this is going to be a great epic kind of fall series. And I don't really have, my expectations aren't really that high, but I really kind of want to shout out Pepe Larraz, who's really been the X-Men artist, right? He's become the X-Men artist on a couple of different books. and, you know, to have the, put together a 68-page epic like this, it's not easy. And what they're doing these days, and I think it's really a visually exciting book to look at. One of my biggest problems with the book is they spend so many times doing the talking head thing. There's not a lot of action. But that's been one of the, since Hickman took over, they do a lot of exposition in this book, right? not a lot of stuff going on action wise.
Yeah. And you got to, I mean, for as much stuff as they're trying to tie in together and explain, I get it. And it's something that needed to happen. Right. So, like I said before, Hickman and Cates, they're trying to tie all this crap that's out there that's so similar. They're trying to make it a part of each other's history. So we can say, oh, this is the most powerful this is the most powerful sword in the universe. Well, what about this freaking thing over here? And this is where all those intertwining things shall meet. Hey, you've got this door. What about this door? Right. Oh, you got this portal to this universe. Well, what about this one? So, once again, those are the doors and the portals. That's where that's symbolically, that's what they're trying to do when they're talking about, hey, the Citadel is the endpoint of where all this stuff meets. It's literally saying, hey, all this stuff meets up, and this is it. So that's a beautiful symbolic point that I love that they threw in there. And they're talking about the swords. They're showing us green doors. They're showing us red doors. They're showing us colors. They're showing us past, future, history. I loved it. So for me, this is a flame on. Don't go crazy freaking buying this, but still,
buy it once.
Yeah, buy the TP, buy the trade paperback. In fact, this was just a one shot, I believe, right?
One
shot out of the 22.
There's a one, yeah. And throughout this, they tell you in the end. So there's the first, it looks like there's probably going to be four X of Swords main books in between all of the other crossover issues. So we have chapter one is this one, Creation, and then it's going to go through all of the mutant books this month. And then chapter 11 is going to be X of Swords Stasis number one, which is going to be another standalone book. And then who knows what's happening in the second half. But I imagine that there's probably going to be one at the end too. So maybe three standalone books in between 2 months worth of mutant books. So it's going to be interesting. There's one, and I think this was a flame on too, Lucas. So this is really kind of, if you're going to bother reading the mutants books for the next 2 months, you have to buy this book.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's not just a mutant book. This is a Hulk book. This is a Venom book. All that stuff ties in. This is how crazy this ties in. Right. I don't know if people remember a year ago, Doc Strange, he had to go up against Galactus, and he was dealing with Galactus. So what did he do? He transported Galactus to another world, another universe. Where did he transport him to? The other world. He transported him to this other world, this particular universe, to get rid of him for a while he freaking rested up. So once again, Crossroads all tying in.
One more gripe and then I'm done. Right. I can't tell the difference between Saturnine and the White Queen. So,
you really can't.
I mean,
the White Queen, she's a little bit more liberal with her clothing. Saturnine, right. Make sure she covers up.
Well, that's what, like, the difference. Like I was like. Trouble. When I was reading the book, I was like, okay, Saturnine has like the puffy shoulders with the like she's got a mink coat on, and the White Queen doesn't. But other than that, they look alike. So it was just one of those things that I was just like, you can't make them look a little different, but it's whatever. So, but I mean, other than that, flame on this book. You kind of have to pick it up. There's a lot to unpack, a lot going on, and hopefully they can keep the quality up and not kind of let any of the explanations off the rails and not blow it, so to speak, which I kind of feel like Marvel does from time to time.
This stuff is too highbrow that it's not going to fall off.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. And I appreciate that, right? So, for instance, just like you called out the fact about what was going on in Mortal Hulk, man, there was all types of crazy stuff going on that shouldn't have been happening. Like, hey, mutants don't kill mutants. Well, guess what? In this Mortal She-Hulk point, they're up there killing mutants. It's just too highbrow, and the rules are too stringent right now for it to make any sense right now and for it to be consistent. But I still appreciate that they are trying to make rules. Mm-hmm. I love that.
That was you brought it up. I think since Hickman has taken over X-Men, and I think we spoke highly of Powers of X and House of X when it first came out last year, about all the different things Hickman was trying. Like, we were applauding him. Good job. This is the first time we've seen anybody introduce new ideas into comics in general, really, for a long, long time. And even though the last several months we've kind of been like, it's boring. It's really not a lot happening. The ideas here are following through, and we're kind of getting, we're getting a continuation of the ideas that he had going on in his head. And for myself, I like ambition. I like to read something I don't feel like I've read before. Right. And I think this is interesting and very willing to see where it's going. So congratulations to Hickman for kind of keeping my interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff, man. Yeah. So this was a really great week for Marvel Comics all around. I liked most of the stuff that I read.
Yeah.
Even that Daredevil book, which is, like I told you guys before, that was the best Iron Man book from 2020.
for sure. Yeah. There was a couple of shout outs. I think Juggernaut wasn't bad, which was, that was the first issue of a mini series.
First issue, right? That had the first appearance of Diesel. That is a young little girl who has the powers to over kinetic stuff, so she's able to speed stuff up or slow stuff down, even as powerful as Juggernaut. So that was a pretty interesting thing. That was in the comics this week.
Yep, and shout out to the second issue of Maestro, and that I really am enjoying that book, even though I'm contradicting myself with not liking kind of Elseworlds what if books, and Maestro is a huge one. So, but I'm enjoying Maestro because it was the bringing back Peter D to write it. So
yeah. Hey, if it works, it works. The Spider-Man Noir, which is the best Black Panther book this year. Oh my God.
That's, you know,
the best Shuri book of the last 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, what are you going to do? All right, well, let's end this before we start clobbering stuff. All right. All right, so we'll see you again in 2 weeks. We are full on in the fall, and football season is upon us, and it's time to go get all your pumpkin spice and everything nice, and go visit your pumpkin patches. It's almost Halloween, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I gotta go to the pumpkin patch right now. Fucking dig my hands with all those bugs and everything.
And all right.
Get a good one.
All right. So we will see you again in a couple of weeks. And until then, stay safe.
Out.